Hello and welcome to Reflex Point, your weekly podcast where we review and discuss the series Robotech one episode at a time. We're your hosts, Major Medina.
And I'm Paul Marquez.
And this week we are discussing Episode 5, Transformation. Transformation first appeared on television on March 8, 1985, and the synopsis reads, while Roy attempts to convince Rick to enlist, the crew of SDF-1 is forced to spectacularly improvise to ward off an attack. The first thing I wanted to mention is, from the previous episode, the narration at the end of the episode that gives you the preview for this episode says, human drama is played out against the backdrop of interplanetary war. And not only did I think that was a nice little wrap up there, but it's also like an elevator pitch for the series as a whole, isn't it?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I thought it was just a nice touch. So we have Episode 5, Transformation. Narrator gives a recap of the last two episodes. While he's talking, we're seeing the city being rebuilt. And there's a couple of things that pass by the screen that I had to stop and go like, hey, I recognize that. What is that? One of them being carried on this kind of pulley system was an armored Valkyrie. Did you catch that?
That's the one with the big cannons, right?
No. That's the destroyed monster.
Okay, the monster, right? Yeah. So there was one before that one then, right?
Right. So it's a Valkyrie that's armored, so it looks a lot different. And then that second one is that monster. Anyway, I thought it was really cool to see those ships inside the ship itself.
Yeah, and I've always focused in on that monster. For whatever it is, because those monsters, they're not very glorious. You know, it's not like they've got the acrobatics of the Veritex, but there's just something that is endearing about them.
Yeah, from what I understand, they're like super heavy.
So imagine if you're in a city, right? And all of a sudden you look up and on this, you know, pulley system, all these tons of robots are being transported, you know, over your head. Like that would be kind of scary at certain points, right?
I don't know. I mean, you're transported in space. You were in a shelter just 2 weeks ago. Now you're inside your remade city, inside the ship on the other side of Pluto. And it depends on how much information the civilians are getting. But I don't know. Not the craziest thing that's happened to you in the last 3 weeks, right?
Right. Yeah, true enough. And it seems that it would be realistic in the sense that the city probably had to be put in some kind of storage area. And so, of course, mechs had to be moved around, and they were going to be moved around in that area.
Yeah, I love it. I would like to know if there was some kind of schematic printout of where they are in the ship and what was there originally. That would be interesting to try to research.
But, okay, so what I have here is it opens up, and it starts with Minmay cleaning up their restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And she's humming the wedding march. That dun 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 dun. So, was she remembering that little ceremony that her and Rick had, or is that how much of a bride she wants to be? You know, because I just don't find girls dream about being married like that anymore. If they ever did, really.
Well, that's true, but it was also a television trope, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to get married. The only thing I'm here for is to get married. And you know, the guy always being like, whoa.
Right.
But one thing, and then that kind of ties into this other one. So when we see her, there's a tight shot of her putting down some chairs from tables, right? So it looks like what I originally thought was is that she was setting up the restaurant that's already open. And then her aunt and her uncle come walking in, and we see, oh no, the place is still kind of trashed. So I consider that a little bit of a reveal, right? Like, oh, it looks like she's setting up the shop. Then they pull back. Nope, it's not even ready yet. And she's going to go off on her, let's get this restaurant back up and open. I feel the same way about the wedding march that she's humming. Like, to us, we're kind of thinking, oh, she's still on that. But then the episode flips it on us. Because the whole episode centered around Rick being all mopey about Minmay kind of brushing him off, right?
Yeah. And from the day of the rescue of Rick and Minmay, when did this episode start? Did it say like a week or something like that?
I think it's the very next day.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense. why do you suppose Minmay is so much more recovered than Rick?
Okay, so I did think about that. So I'm going to say two things. One, more than likely, Rick, in taking care of her, was giving her the larger portion of food. And she was not exerting herself as much as Rick was searching the ship and making the map. She certainly didn't go out there and do the spacewalk and almost die. But I think he was exerting himself a lot more. She was not, and I think Rick would have been giving her more food.
Do you think that her support system played a part in it too? Like if you got rescued and your family was there, you'd be super stoked about it, right? Rick really didn't have anybody.
Yeah. Seeing that not only is your family okay, but that the restaurants pack up and you can literally just go back to your room that I guess was fixed because it was supposed to have been destroyed, right? Like as Rick goes careening into it in the Battleoid.
Right. Okay, so that leaves another question then. Exactly how Matt crossed the city, when it got warped with SDF-1 or space folded, it showed a big bubble that presumably just sucked everything with it and took it past Pluto, right?
Right.
Swallowing up pretty much the island. So did they just cut this city and put it in the ship? Or did they take like models and you know, say, okay, and rebuilt it in the ship?
Yeah, so I believe they did rebuild it inside the ship. Now, I would imagine, you know, larger structures were mostly together still. I guess it depends on the effect. Well, no, think about it. You're inside the bubble of the space fold. It's not like you're – wouldn't be designed that if you're inside the bubble of the space fold that it would destroy whatever was in there. But it, Global at some point says, you know, bring all the debris in from the ship. So that kind of tells me they did – bring it in pieces and kind of put it where, I guess, where it belonged.
And, you know, being like a military city the way it was, you know, it possibly could have been in the sense, you know how like military engineers can put shit up and take it down right away?
Right. Yeah.
So given advancements with robotechnology, it could have been real easy to put up and down a city like that.
There's also the potential that because it's a military city, they had the whole schematic for it.
You would think they did, or at least some of the survivors would have, you know, records from the shelters.
Yeah. Again, we're giving it a lot more thought than the creators ever did, but sure.
Because it is kind of a stretch, you know? It's a city, and they rebuilt. I mean, you see cars.
Oh, yeah. No, you see cars, you see dirt, you see trees. They brought in trees, man.
Well, maybe those were fake trees.
Oh, that's a good point. So then, here comes the bride. I love it. I you know what? I thought it was a good touch. And you know what? I'm going to approach this, and I'm going to see how far I can get with this. I'm going to approach this as a defender of Minmay.
All right.
Well, we'll see how many episodes it lasts, but I'll say this. Through this episode, it's not that I like everything she does. It's that it reads as true.
Okay, I got you.
And we'll get into that a little bit more. So her aunt and uncle come in, and that's when we find out that Rick is still there too, resting. And then Minmay starts asking about reopening the restaurant, despite the fact that it's still in tatters. Which, it's not so much that I like the fact that she... wants to reopen the restaurant. It's the enthusiasm with which she does it.
You have to believe that she's very charismatic with how she develops in the future of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think this is a perfect example of showing what she was like pre-fame, you know? And that, yes, you're right. Her infectious smile, her enthusiasm, her youthful exuberance was like, hey, yes, oh, you know, yes, we can do this. Why wouldn't we do this?
Right, because you have to think about it. Like, she has to be so enthusiastic that she gets over what normal people would go like, she's just a kid. She doesn't know anything.
And it's attributes like that help you get fame, you know? Famous people are just people everyone wants to be around. I love people like that, like Minmay, you know, because I love to grind them down and make them as miserable as I am. And then I go, ha ha.
It's like,
I win.
When I'm at work and the new person comes in with all their ideas, I always say, I love seeing the enthusiasm slowly drain from their eyes. And the fact that they have a bunch of ideas and this is how we did it at my previous company and all that, and everybody just ignores them and they slowly stop and they join us.
It must be what the Borg feel like when they assimilate someone.
So I do want to touch on that her aunt and uncle explained that they spent half a day waiting in line for just a small amount of rations. Seems like a pretty ineffective way to get rations to the people.
Definitely. And that leads to where it would behoove the military to use the restaurant as, you know, ration distribution.
But wait a second. They have a cafeteria.
What do you mean? Well,
or maybe that's just for officers or...
Are you assuming that they have that cafeteria, or did they say somewhere that...
No. Remember previous episode, the cafeteria is where Claudia and Lisa talk about them rebuilding the city inside the ship.
Yes. I don't think it would be much of a stretch to say that that's probably reserved for officers, military personnel, because they didn't plan on 70,000 civilians, right?
Right. That's probably not even in an accessible area to them. Like, you'd have to clear them to get up to. Okay. Yeah. No. Not a bad stretch. Just give them rations. Keep them in the city. Keep them happy. Keep them quiet.
Right. And so all they have is that little box, but it's probably some kind of high protein MRE. And they're just like, here, this will keep you alive.
Real quick, do you know the name of the restaurant?
Now this comes
from the books.
Wait. Something dragon, right?
You win, sir. The White Dragon.
Okay, thank you. I was going to say Golden Dragon.
Hey, you went color. Come on, you're 99% there. Yeah, called the White Dragon. Again, that came from the book, so I was interested in seeing whether you had remembered it or not, because it's not mentioned in the series. But in the Japanese version, it's called Nyan Nyan Chinese food.
Which, of course, translated means White Dragon.
Actually, Nyan Nyan is the Japanese version of a cat meowing.
Meow meow?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wait a minute. So an Asian cat says meow, Nyan Nyan?
You realize other cultures have different versions of what animals say, well, right? Okay. Animal sounds?
I do, because, you know, in America, apparently, little birds say chirp, chirp, but in Mexico, they say pio, 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 which I'm like, what? So I guess it makes a certain amount of sense that halfway across the world, cats say meow, meow, or whatever that was.
Well, if you think of the Nyan cat, right?
Nyan, Nyan. Okay, but I'm, man, thanks for hitting me with that trivia, because that's pretty awesome to know.
Yeah. So the mayor happens by while... The infectious Minmei convinces them that while they may be out in outer space, they could still have life as usual, seeing as how it's still their good old hometown. So here's a little bit more trivia. The mayor's name is Tommy Luan. That's L-U-A-N. So the mayor's voice actor is credited as Drew Thomas. But if you delve a little deeper, you find out that Drew Thomas is a pseudonym for our very own story editor and credited writer for this episode, Steve Kramer.
Really?
Who is also the voice of Angelo Dante.
From Southern Cross?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I, you know what? I would never even put that connection together.
So that's our story editor right there. We've brought him up before, Steve Kramer. Credited as the writer of this episode. And also talks like this.
That's a good impression.
He's one of my favorite voices.
So then she talks about life as usual. Then a car of soldiers pulls up, right? I mean, yep. immediately upon announcing that they're going to open the restaurant. And they're like, oh, we heard you're opening this place up. Now, it's only funny because think of how fast rumors spread in any situation. So now you've got this enclosed city where everybody probably already knows everybody as it is anyway.
Sure.
Hell yeah, they're going to drive up and be like, and you know, and they're like, hey, by the way, we used to love to eat at Meow Meow Restaurant or whatever the fuck it's called.
Oh my God, it just hit me how bad that is as a Chinese restaurant for American audiences.
Oh my God.
It's good to go ahead and change that to the White Dragon.
I'm going to need a moment.
The finest in feline cuisine.
And I didn't even mean it that way.
I know.
I didn't even mean it that way.
That's the best part.
Okay, so Min Mei ends up serving the soldiers, right?
Yeah.
And then they start. Because, of course, like you know, it's like TMZ. They're just like, oh, hey, so you're that girl, right? Because, of course, they're going to ask that. You know, one of them was like, hey, that's that chick, right? And then they're like, oh, shit, yeah. Whereas, what's his name? We heard he's living here. That's how much people are talking about this, right?
I know. And again, this is the very next day.
And it's only funny because it's so true. You know, from one ear to the next, it starts out with, man, yeah, that piece of metal or whatever it was fell, and those two kids were down there.
Right.
Then it would be like, oh, man, those two kids? Oh, my God, they lived together? Oh, my God, she's pregnant, you know? I mean, it would be, it's a game of telephone. And by the time it got to Captain Global, he'd be like, twos and trotty prisoners were found in the bowels of the ship. He'd be like, Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, they start teasing her, right? Yeah, and yeah. And she lashes out, but, yeah, okay. She's lashing out. Rick's just a friend. We see that Rick's climbing down the stairs and overhears everything. But you have a group of soldiers questioning her honor. Of course she's going to defend herself and say, like, he's just a friend. That's not what, it was not like that at all. And then huff off, like, hey, you know what?
Because it's none of their business, you know? Okay, I met my wife at work, okay? And before we actually became anything, everyone already thought that we were some kind of couple, you know? And they would be like, hey, are you da, da, da? And I'd be like, why? Because I was nice? Like, no. And even if I was, I wouldn't fucking tell you. So go away.
Yeah.
So, right. So you're right. You know, she's this young girl. She's being peppered with questions by a bunch of goofuses, you know? And she's just like, dude. Order some food. I'm working right now, you know? I'm not even... Come on. And then when he implies, I think you know what we mean or something like that, right?
Right, right.
You didn't fall in love or nothing, you know?
Like, yeah, like super pointed questions. If I were Rick, I would have understood her saying that. That's really all I'm saying. I would have understood it.
Exactly. No, I hear you.
But I probably wouldn't have understood that when I was 19 either. I would have been like... I guess it was something, but it's not. And it's just been verified because she doesn't even know I'm listening.
So what you would have said is, it must have been love, but it's over now.
So they all order chow mein. But here's the weird part. In the original Japanese version, they order ramen. I'm kidding. That's about the only difference in these two episodes.
You should have seen how wide my mouth was open right now. I'm like, what? Like the little packets? Oh my God, you got me on that one. I was like, no shit.
I'm guessing American audiences weren't ready for ramen. But yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, wow.
They all order chow mein, and Rick returns to his room upset at Min Mei's apparent disregard. So then we're going to cut to Global inquiring about the main gun from Dr. Emil Lang.
Okay, so Dr. Lang is explaining to Global about a phenomenon that's occurring on the ship after the fold system disappeared. And he starts to talk about the modular transformation. But the first thing is, if you look at him, his eyes are black with little white pupils.
Right.
Okay. And he's got a heavy accent. And I understand the series had limitations, but I think they did such a disservice for not giving his story a little more attention. Because First off, he was one of the first part of the team that went in there to see what the fuck this thing was.
As I understand it, he was handpicked.
And I think Fokker was on the team too, right?
I don't know.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe Fokker was too. But that's neither here nor there. Lang definitely was.
Yeah.
And he experienced, you know, I guess when messing around with some of the technology, he ended up having some kind of mind meld sort of thing with the equipment and had a protoculture mind boost.
Okay.
And it ended up kind of altering him, and it gave him those black irises with the white pupil. So not only did it transform him mentally, you know, it had a physical effect too.
So the wiki counters that.
No.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. No.
I'm not kidding you. I did a little bit of research. I know you're excited to talk about Dr. Lang.
Okay. I'm calling fake news right now, man. I'll believe you on the meow meow fucking kitchen, but not fucking Lang, all right? No, I believe you. I believe you. What's up? What's up? What happened?
I want to read what it says. During the first Robotech War, he was an important enough figure to be invited in meetings with the command crew of the ship. He had a thick German accent and big beady eyes.
Wait, yeah, big beady?
Yeah, and big beady eyes. Contrary to popular belief, the condition of his eyes was not due to being accidentally boosted by protoculture. That is just per the Robotech.fandom.com wiki. So it does sound like maybe it was a character choice that they were gonna go with and do some reveal on and then kind of went back on.
Yeah, but in the books, I remember them saying that, you know, like Lang would talk to people and they would get uneasy about those eyes.
Oh, look, I got uneasy just looking at them in the episode.
And then it kind of explained why, you know, and I think it was the Sentinels, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
That explained, you know, when he first contacted the Robotech equipment or whatever it was,
right,
that he was already brilliant, but it kind of boosted his mind on everything.
So he would have been exposed to it before they even knew what it was. So there is, it just depends on whether that's a first or secondary canon. We're going to look into it because I have something even better about Dr. Emil Lang.
Okay, what you got?
Dr. Emil Lang is voiced by Scott Bernard himself, Gregory Snegoff.
Really? I did not know that. So Scott Bernard's character, man, that guy did pretty good at convincing me that it was two different people.
But hold on, because Gregory Snegoff also voices Chiron.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
But hold on, he also voices Captain Kramer, who we heard was second in command of
Skull Squadron.
I know that's lesser, but that's about the only guy we've seen so far. We haven't seen Chiron and we haven't heard Scott Bernard yet. But that's Dr. Lang. That's why I was so excited about talking about this, because I was like, not only are you going to be giving us some stuff, but then you're going to find out voiced by the same guy that Scott Bernard was voiced by.
Wow, man. You just hit me with some shit I did not know. Crazy. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So Dr. Lang starts to discuss with Glovel about how the main gun cannot be fired. However, he thinks that the SDF-1 was built with a modular design, I guess.
But it's going to mess things up on the inside.
You know, big changes are going to occur, right?
But either way, I mean, Glovel has to sit there and kind of balance, you know, panic versus safety, right?
And it seems like at first he's like, okay, well, then I guess we're not using the main gun. He never says that, but you can tell he's like, oh, shit, what?
It's just one hit after another with Global, yeah, right? Yeah.
That poor guy is probably downing Tums like you can't believe. So then let's see. So it shifts back to Rick, right? Coming downstairs now.
Right.
And so we go back to the restaurant. He's coming down the stairs and it's full. And Min Mei is happy to see Rick, right? Which indicates there is something, right? And he totally ignores her, just like a 19-year-old would, who feels that he's been wronged somehow, right?
This reads true. 19-year-old doesn't even say a word to her. Rick goes total emo in this moment. He's listening to the Smiths on his Walkman.
Right, and he walks right the fuck out, and she's like, huh?
And then he goes back to the Mockingbird. Now, here's one thing I want to bring up. I don't know if you've seen it, but on the Robotech Facebook group, they've done a little bit of a mashup of Robotech and Top Gun. And there have been some videos where they'll throw the Top Gun music on top of the intros. But here's the thing. When he's down looking at the Mockingbird, they're playing what I've always just called Robotech sad music. And I realize that it sounds like the same music that plays in Top Gun when Maverick is upset about Goose's death. And that music by Harold Faltermeyer is called Memories.
Okay, but wait a minute. Are you telling me that, because what I've always thought about it is that it always, to me, it sounded like a slow, sad version of We Will Win.
Wow, really?
That's We Will Win. Mage, you don't hear it in there?
Oh my gosh, you're killing me.
And so that's crazy, because that was one of the talking points I wanted to tell you about, was that sad music is fucking touching, man. Like it
oh yeah.
It works when they're talking, when something's supposed to be sad and you hear that We Will Win played like that. Because,
Whoa. Man,
We Will Win used to hype me up. Like, if I used to listen to that when I used to go play Little League games, you know, to get myself, to get my game face on.
You want me to edit that out? Or
put that in? That is fine.
Wow. What? Not even important to the scene all that much, but not even the first time we've heard that music, but wow. Okay.
Okay, so now you're gonna watch, like, you're gonna, when you watch it again, yeah, you're gonna do it a little different now, just because you're gonna be like, I know where that tune's from now. So Rick does go to the Mockingbird. Sad music is playing. Okay, and so think about it. At this point, he's got to feel, even though it's a lot of self-pity,
yeah,
that the whole world's shitting on him right now.
It's a he's a 19-year-old. Of course, yes, he's gonna feel. He has every right to feel that.
And he's just lived through a global civil war. Okay, he's, even as a civilian, there was probably some pretty terrible shit going on, you know?
Right.
And you think it's over, and now you're on this ship you didn't even want to be on, because I don't think he's total anti-military, but he's definitely just done with it, you know, done with hearing about war. He's done. And now his favorite thing in the whole world is a piece of trash in front of him. And he's just like, yep, of course, this is exactly how it would end up.
Then I think that's why Rick is falling back on, well, if not mid-May, then flying, but going down to see the ship that's been released from the wires and covered in the tent that they had made out of it. I thought he was really mourning the whole mid-May thing.
When he's looking at the Mockingbird?
Yeah, because it's covered in the tent that mid-May had made, you know, in the house that they had been in.
It almost makes it seem like a death shroud, right? For that ship.
Yeah, absolutely. But also for him and Minmay's relationship.
Yeah.
It's like a representation of that.
Yeah. Yep.
And the sad music certainly doesn't help.
Or it does help.
Sure.
You know, depending on how you look at it.
Sorry to interrupt the program, folks, but it's that time again for our annual pledge drive, and this year, instead of your dollar donations helping us keep the lights on, we're asking that you check your garages, sheds, and or junk rooms for any used or broken mecha, disused protoculture, or maybe a light fan jet that no longer flies, and hope that you would consider donating them to our station. If you're like me, I'm sure you've enjoyed hours of quality programming like This Macross Life, the Global Radio Hour, and The Splendid Ration with host Lynn Max. This year, your donations are needed more than ever to keep these shows alive. And I know that you're thinking, someone else has always foot the bill and I've just sat back and listened without a care in the world. Well, now we're hurling through the dark reaches of space in an oversized Navy vessel. And I'm not saying it's because you didn't donate last year, but I'm also not saying that. So reach deep. And keep reaching until you've come up with a donation. Or we'll keep interrupting quality shows like Reflex Point, a Robotech podcast, until you just can't listen anymore. All right, now back to the show.
This is NPR, La Crosse Public Radio.
And so Roy seemingly tries to, you know, hey, what's going on, man? Like, you know, come on. Min Mei said that you need exercise. Like, I don't think he can relate to Rick's depression at all. Mm. And how, you know what? Mm. Really, if you think about Roy's character, like, how could he? He's apparently he's smooth with the women.
Right.
He's probably got some kind of wall built up where that couldn't be a problem.
That's a good point. All right.
And his answer is exercise. Now, you know, I don't know if you can edit this if you don't want to disclose it, but you've yourself dealt with bouts of depression, right?
No, yeah, largely.
Do you think exercise was the answer?
Couldn't tell you. Never tried it.
Right. And even if you did, I mean, it might make you feel better. Exercise has got to be good. I personally don't care for it. But
no, I hear you. But the whole exercise thing is a ruse to really just get him up to what I think is the cafeteria just to see the Veritex launching off of either the data list or the Prometheus, right?
Right. And so he tries to, you know, and I think he's trying to tell Rick, join us because you'll get to fly.
Yeah, so, yeah, let me draw that together. He can't make the connection between him being upset about Min Mei because it's never been a problem for him, right? So to him, he really is just thinking he's sad because he can't fly.
And I love the way he's like, well, but them's the breaks, kids, kid.
Right. Yeah, and so, you know, like, hey, let's get some exercise. Let's go for a walk. And that's really just to get him up to see the Veritex launching off of the SDF-1. I liked seeing the air marshals in full, like, outer space attire.
Didn't it give it a sense of a jet fighter type machine?
100%. Like, it being 1985, pre-Top Gun. But these are all visuals that I have hard-coded into me from Top Gun.
Yes. And Robotech, okay? Because when I was 24, I think, I got hired with UPS. And I worked on the airstrip where the UPS planes came in and landed with all their packages. They got distributed and then put on the trucks and sent out, okay? I got to marshal in the airplanes.
What?
Yes. I worked on the goddamn airport, dude, and I marshaled in airplanes.
You got those crazy flashlights?
Yes. And okay, when they weren't my lightsabers, I was marshaling in Veritech fighters. I just imagined it in my mind. And I remember my training instructor because he was like, this is important. He goes, because you know what? You may not ever speak a language, whatever, but with this training, you can go on to any airport in the world and marshal in an airplane because every pilot knows what you're talking about when you marshal them in. And I don't know why that stuck with me, but I was like, wow.
No, that's impactful.
Yeah, and it was neat. But in my stupid-ass 24-year-old head, I was marshaling in Veritex just the way I had remembered from the episode. It helped me pass the time, man.
And that's what matters. Wow, that's amazing. So Roy asks Rick to join the Robotech forces and quit moping about. So then Rick says he doesn't want to be a fighter pilot.
And you can't blame him. It's not the same thing, right?
So I'll say it from my perspective. I was a little bit surprised that he says, I don't want to be a fighter pilot. Isn't that a little out of character that he wouldn't want to be a fighter pilot? But then it made sense to me. Let me take you down a little rabbit hole. Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey. There are 17 steps to this whole hero's journey. If you watch Star Wars, if you watch Lord of the Rings, they all follow this kind of legend and all that. So right now we're in this initial part, this departure phase, right? And it's just a structure for how to create a story. So you have Rick, he's been ripped from his ordinary world. He's now in space. And now Roy has literally given him a call to adventure. But in Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, he has to deny that. And if you think about it, like in Star Wars, Luke meets Obi-Wan. They see the message from Princess Leia. Obi-Wan tells him, you must train to be a Jedi. And he goes, yeah, I can't do that. I'm needed on the farm. There's a call to adventure, and then the hero has to deny it. So this whole Macross saga is following the hero's journey more so than I ever had imagined. Okay, so Rick asked Roy if a girl can change overnight completely. So here's the weird thing about it is you have this whole call to action and him denying it, and then it immediately changes to, but that's not even what I'm thinking about, man. And this is what makes me think that he was sitting there in front of the Mockingbird looking at the tent and looking at the place that him and Minmay had lived for 12 days over, you know, his plane.
Right, right.
And Roy is caught off guard by that whole thing, right?
Yeah, I totally see it.
By going like, whoa, wait, that's not what we were talking about. In fact, doesn't even bring it back up, right? Which I gotta say makes me like Roy a lot more. But ultimately, it's Minmay that is the one that helps him accept the call to action to go on the journey.
Right, right. Okay.
Wildly, like, on point. Like, in terms of storytelling, I can't believe how closely it follows so many other stories that I knew.
You know, it makes me think, like, you know, for you, it was Star Wars. For me, it's Lord of the Rings, like... You're right. You know, Bilbo was a very reluctant hero to accept. Hey, what could a hobbit do? You know, and so my take on it though was that it was kind of fucked up about Roy. Okay, because look, joining the military is a very specific kind of thing, yeah. And I can understand Rick not wanting to be a fighter pilot. He doesn't want to kill anybody. He just wants to fly.
Yeah.
And now you have Roy pushing him. I enjoy the martial arts. Okay, I really do. I was in wrestling. I had my sons in boxing and thoroughly enjoyed the competition of it and all that stuff. But if you would have put me in like the military where I might have to kill somebody, that's a whole different story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's got to be my choice. That can't be someone trying to convince me that because I might be good at it because my wrestling background might give me, you know, leverage in a certain situation, or that my boxing background might give me a leverage. I still have to make that choice.
Do you think that's the impetus for him denying the request?
So before all that, so Rick basically tells Roy he doesn't want to be a fighter pilot, and then Roy gives him some woman advice, right?
Yes.
Be careful with girls like Minmay, they're kind of fickle. And then he says, be careful that some guy in uniform doesn't come up and sweep her away. And that, I think he just threw in there to try to push his point a little bit more.
I think it was more like, hey, I know we've kind of had our back and forth about, you know, this girl in the first place. Although I don't know if they really remember that she was the one with Jason in front of a Petit Cola machine.
I think Rick does. Rick has to. He rescued her from that part, and then they were trapped on the ship. Yeah, so they know.
The reason I think it's like a lighthearted comment, like I don't think Roy really means it, because then Rick gives Roy that really heartfelt thanks.
Right, thanks, big brother.
And I really think it's just Roy is like, hey, come with us, be part of this. And I think that's Roy's way of thinking he's gonna fix whatever is wrong with Rick. And Rick saying like, well, wait, I don't want to be a fighter pilot. Anyway, so Minmay, and him going like, don't worry about it, man. She's the one who told me in the first place. Like, she obviously sees you. Go to Minmay. She's the one who told me that you were here having a hard time. And Rick giving that heartfelt thanks is like, wow, that was really sweet of Roy. He really is looking out for Rick. And I think for the first time that we've seen in the series.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So then it jumps over to the Zentradi now, right?
Yep.
And they're reviewing footage of the battle. And Exidor is like, there's something you need to see to Britai.
Right.
And Britai says, wait a minute, are those like, and he's like tripped out. And he's like, yes, you know, my Cronians.
Not only do they see who they're fighting, man, we get to see a bunch of people dying, bro.
Yes. Being stepped on, falling off buildings.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, but if you've only watched the show, you don't have an appreciation for exactly what that means. Because then, but then Exidor does go to say, you know, I found some old records or some old legends, or, and you don't really understand what that means unless you've really delved into it, you know?
So crazy to me that they would include something like a legend, you know, because everything we see about the Zentradi, very, very logically thinking, right?
And then it lends out a little bit more of Britai's character, because then he, you know, Exidor tells him this and he's sitting there going, okay, yeah. But he's like, so I'm to keep my hands off of any Micronian planet, huh? Like he's in anticipation of it.
Well, he says humbug. So obviously Britai's up on his Dickens. Right. But Exidor does recommend ceasing relations with the planet immediately, right?
And Britai does acquiesce.
Right, right. Yeah, but says, I mean, Exidor does say, but we should keep tabs on the ship itself. Orders a space fold, and they're going to follow the STF-1, right?
Which is their main mission. But it does, to me, it seems like Britai has no issues with engaging Micronians.
All right, so then we cut to Rick and Minmay. They're meeting in her room, and Rick sees a letter for her singing audition for the Miss Macross competition, but he had a little bit of mopiness still.
Yeah.
Thinking that the letter was from a boyfriend, perhaps.
Oh, a love letter, huh?
It's just where your mind would go to, and it feeds back into that idea that that's what was on his mind the entire time.
Right, and that's almost like you trying to force the girl to say, no, like you're the one I want to be my boyfriend. This is just da-da-da,
yes,
know?
Yeah. But, you know, we get another scene, and I like this part where Rick is optimistic because she's like, well, it doesn't matter because we're not on Earth. And he goes, well, you can do it when we get back. And then her being ultra realistic of saying like, yeah, if we get back. Okay, so we have Rick being optimistic about returning home. And then Minmay does that little turnaround of like, hey, do you have any dreams? And then Rick, man, he really goes down a road saying like, yeah, I had a dream, but I'm never going to have another dream again. You know, and Minmay's like, are you talking about your plane? And he's like, yeah. Man, it's such teenager talk, but true to life teenager talk, right? Man. That's how you feel.
It's just relatable, you know? The fit that he threw, as unfair as it was, is relatable.
That's a good way of saying it. It is unfair, but it's also like, yeah, that's what happens. So then back on the bridge, they're detecting an alien starship coming out of fold. So, you know, there's human drama and then there's interplanetary war. Right. And they throw in an alarm for the counterattack, and we see a Skull Squadron launch out, and Rick and Minmay hear the alarm, don't seem that bothered by it.
You would have thought that there would have been some kind of warning that, hey, just in case, people, we may go through this transformation, and if that starts to happen, get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah, why don't you get back in the safety shelters, right?
Right, but apparently that doesn't happen.
No, but we do go back to battle scenes. Badass battle scenes, yep. Man. The main thing we were missing from episode 4.
So lasers and missiles galore.
Yeah. And the badass guitar theme again. You know, the action guitar theme.
Yes. And then you hear Roy say, these guys are a lot better up here. We're going to have a tough one. And so, because you got to think about it, those battle pods, you know, they couldn't fly. But in the vacuum of space, you know, just given the right jets, they can up, down, left, right, whichever way they've got to go.
Right, right. No friction, man. And back on the Zentradi Bridge, we got Britai explaining they have a decoy vessel out there. And it's within the SDF-1's firing range. Exidor doesn't know why they haven't fired yet.
He's trying to provoke a main gunshot, right?
Right. So they're going to once again increase the firing. And man, we get more ships just being blown to hell.
Yeah, lots of them. If all those little bubbles are ships, there's a lot. And so then Global orders the transformation, right?
Oh, man. Dr. Lang's designated modular formation. What a phrase, huh?
And then they're like, Captain, like, that could fuck up the city. And then he's like, yeah, but I've got no choice. Do it. And he was right. It was either that or defeat.
Right. Right. Yeah, then okay, so we get the 3 minutes of transformation. We cut back to Rick and Minmay. They're over a ledge overlooking the entire Macross City, rebuilt Macross City, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've been defending Minmay this entire time, and I still will use it as a defense, but here's the thing. So Rick's going on about Roy, and she's like, you're always talking about Roy. You're as good a pilot as he is, right?
Any day.
Right. So Minmay makes a little comment, basically goads Rick into contemplating joining the Defense Force. Like, he's thinking like, oh, okay, I get it. You think I should be up there too, right?
Right.
Okay, so I have a theory that that's one of the reasons people don't like Minmay. She's never upfront about what she wants. And this is one good example. She doesn't tell Rick, hey, I want you to join the Defense Force because I think that's a good idea. She kind of makes him jealous by talking about Roy. And he's like, oh, you think I should go up there? But that's quickly dissolved by the whole point that he throws a snide remark about Minmay and the soldiers who come into the restaurant, which was a very low blow.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah. It's like, hey, bro, I know you're not feeling good yourself.
Right. I mean, he went straight for the throat, and you know, come on, you gotta work your way there. You don't have to do the uppercut just yet.
Yeah, it was straight to it. But going back to Minmay's character, it rings true to me. So the fact that it's a character choice, I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
And then Rick goes off on the, but then I won't be able to see you. And she's like, look, we're going to see each other just fine on our days off and all that, especially since she has a job now, right?
Right.
I think the upset part is that she's not head over heels over him.
Right, especially if you're that way about her.
Minmay has her own path, and she is not, and yeah, she's manipulative, but that's a character choice. That's just who you would have to deal with if you were going to love her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I buy that 100%.
Look, it's tough defending Minmay, but this episode helped me out a little bit.
And so then they get affected by the transformation, right? Then all of a sudden that chasm opens up. And of course, it's Rick to the rescue again.
Not the greatest little action sequence.
Well, okay, it definitely wasn't falling from the sky after, you know, the arm of your Veritech got shot off in guardian mode and you're trying to put her in your cockpit. But
right.
she could have fallen and got pretty hurt.
Right. And aside from the physical danger, I mean, this was right after, you know, Rick was saying that he wished they had never found him sometimes. And then Minmay got upset and says she hates him. And Rick kind of returns that comment. Then the ship starts breaking apart and she falls into it. But we do see some casualties in these shots. Either one casualty and a bunch of potential casualties while the ship's doing the transformation.
Yeah, people start to get sucked up into the sky because of the loss of gravity. Why didn't someone say, we may have to do this, guys, so if you hear this alarm, you've got 3 minutes to get out of there, because... Yeah.
And even at the expense of a couple of minutes, let's get 5 minutes to get back to the shelter that you guys came here in. You know, the ones that are sealed and have oxygen provided for you.
Right? So then the ship finally transforms. Roy says something to the effect of that, you know, first he's all, what's going on, right? And then he's like, oh, that's the transformation. So the, and then you see the SDF-1 in all its glory. Now the Prometheus and the Daedalus make perfect arms for it.
Oh, thank goodness.
The
thank goodness
gun,
they're modular.
Right. The main gun is spread apart now. It's in its firing position. And it looks like a humanoid. It takes the form of a humanoid shape with legs and everything.
Now, in this configuration, is it referred to as Battaloid? Is the SDF-1 in Battaloid mode?
I do not recall ever hearing them say that SDF-1 is in Battaloid mode.
Okay. So Lisa tells him that there's some other ships detected at some sector, right?
You're right. Okay, like a secondary attack or some shit, huh?
Right. Secondary attack at sector, blah, blah, blah. Disregard fire main cannons. Oh man, that's such a split second decision you have to make, and he makes it effortlessly.
And so the main gun powers up, and boom, let's loose.
Great scene.
And I like okay, so and then so I, on the enhanced version at least, I don't recall the original version, but mm-hmm. It shows one of the battle pods dissolve and you see it just like disintegrate, and then the pilot within start to disintegrate as well.
Oh, I didn't see it.
No?
Okay. No. I'm going to go back and watch.
Okay, yes. The main gun hits and you see the battle pod just start to get stripped away, and all of a sudden you see the Zentradi pilot inside fly back and he starts to get stripped away too.
Or no, I didn't see that.
Then it just kind of shows the rest of the battle pods get disintegrated too, but you know they died.
Yeah.
Really horribly, probably.
And what's great is, you know, after they're destroyed, you know, there's this semi-celebration on the bridge until they look at the captain and then they shut up. They stop cheering. They stop laughing. And Global just immediately goes to, like, I want a damage report.
And then that announcement comes over, report all casualties or injuries to your nearest officer or, you know, whatever it said. But because they knew.
They knew, but they tried to spin it, you know, like, hey, we appreciate your distress, but we want to let you know that the main gun fired and killed everybody. So it was a big success.
You're welcome, by the way. You're
right,
welcome.
Right. Yeah. But Global understands. He holds the weight.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was that or the ship got blown up, you know. I mean, maybe not blown up, but taken over, and then that would have been really bad, you know?
Right.
So Rick and Minmay, right? It's back to them, and she says, "You wanted to see the city destroyed, like, are you happy now?" And he shows remorse. He shows remorse for what he said.
Yeah. And then has a change of heart, just like Joseph Campbell said he would. You know what? I am going to join the Defense Force. So that's the end of the episode, which I was surprised by. I was surprised that we don't get to see Britai and Exidor's reaction to the firing of the main gun.
Right. So ultimately, what do you rate this episode?
Wow. All right. So I feel like we fixed a couple of things that were happening with Minmay in episode 4. So I'm happy about that. I'm upset at Rick's reaction, but I understand it. So I'm not knocking points off for that. Not as much Roy as I would have liked. Not enough of the bridge, not enough of Global. But overall, we got some heavy action. I am going to round this episode out. I'm going to give it an 8.5.
I think I give it a 7.5.
Okay.
All the points you brought up, valid points. For me, it got a little bit slow when Rick and Minmay were talking. I just felt that it wasn't cool that they tried to convince Rick to do something that he felt wholeheartedly against, you know? I was like, man, like, that sucks.
Sure.
But every great epic story has followed that template.
Right.
And I didn't even know that, because I'm going to have to research that a little bit, that you've brought that up. Mm-hmm. But, it makes perfect sense. You know, it's like a style. It's basically a style.
Yeah, all right. But 7.5, 8.5, certainly better than last week's 4. Talk to me about an MVP. You got an MVP for this episode?
I would say it's the mayor's wife. Because if she can marry that that short, funky-headed dude, she took one for the team, bro. Okay. All right, all right, all right. So, MVP. I've got to give it, honestly, I would say to Global.
Okay. Yeah.
I've got to give it to Global. You know, the weight of leadership is still displayed on, you know, for him as much as it ever is. And
yeah.
And he's got to make the tough decisions, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it and they do a great job of expressing that in the animation. I am surprised, by the way, that it's not Lang.
I wish it could be. I just don't think they told enough of his story to make it Lang.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know,
yeah,
we get this we get this quick scene of him explaining to I mean, he could have just been any Robotech scientist telling Global what they have to do, and then that's it. And then you don't hear anything about it afterwards.
Yeah, in all honesty, he doesn't even get named, you know. So I'm going to go with Roy on this one. He's my MVP. I think for the first time in the entire time that we've met him, that he did a genuinely selfless act and that he really was a good... He lived up to the mentor that Rick thinks he is.
Yeah, I would have said, yeah, it was a close call between Global and Roy.
But I have no problems once again awarding MVP to Captain Global. All right, everybody, thank you once again for listening. Boy, we go on. We sure do go on. Yeah, reach out, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, you know, I get... Whenever we get a notification that someone's responded, we get excited. I love to interact with people and see what they've got to say about what the show is. I love reminiscing and talking about what it meant at, you know, at the time when I was younger, what it means now. When I was younger, your adolescence is basically 18 years of a kick to the balls. You know, whether you're getting bullied, whether you're getting, you know, whatever I had to deal with during grade school, junior high, high school. Yeah. But I always looked forward to going home and watching, you know, Robotech was going to be on. And it made everything just a little bit easier, you know? Now here we are on lockdown. And once again, it's Robotech to the rescue.
Yeah. Yeah, this is setting up a structure of something that I look forward to doing each week. One, I look forward to talking to Paul. Two, I look forward to talking about Robotech. Three, I look forward to watching these episodes and trying to find every little bit that I can. Thank you guys for listening. Reach out, join us, join the conversation, and we hope you'll join us next week.
All right, everyone, stay safe out there.